Open session, and Mr. Hanley, could we have a report out of closed session, please?
There was no reportable action in closed session this evening.
Okay, thank you. We have some special presentations tonight. As most of you know, we have a new battalion chief in town, George Wang. Would you come on up, and we'll take care of this oath of office and let everyone meet you. So, I'm going to have you raise your right hand, and then just repeat after me. Do each of us need to use this? Okay. I, George Wang.
I, George Wang.
Do solemnly swear that I will support and defend.
I do solemnly swear to support and defend.
The Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California.
The Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of California.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith and allegiance.
I will bear true faith and allegiance.
To the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California.
To the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the State of California.
And that I take this obligation freely.
That I take this obligation freely.
Without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion.
Without mental reservations or purpose of evasion.
And I will well and faithfully discharge the duties.
I will, say that again.
I will well and faithfully discharge the duties.
I will well, faithfully, and discharge the duties.
Upon which I am about to enter.
Upon which I am about to enter.
We got through that. Congratulations and welcome aboard. Now we have a certificate of appreciation for Harmony. Come on up, Harmony. You won't have to repeat after me. But I am going to read something here. This certificate is hereby presented. This certificate is hereby presented on behalf of the Los Osos Community Services District Board of Directors in grateful recognition of your 6 years of dedicated and valuable service as the administrative assistant to the battalion chief at Station 15 South Bay. We thank you for your energy, motivation, and commitment to the community of Los Osos and wish you well in all your future endeavors. And I can't believe it was only 6 years.
I just want to say thank you to obviously the firefighters, the battalion chiefs that I got to work with and support, Carrie, who's been faithfully coming in behind me to help pick up all the pieces so they don't get dropped, the district and the board for all their support to the fire department, and the community for your passionate service to making sure that this community operates freely and the way that obviously it should. So, and same to the district and the board. You guys are doing a great job. I can tell you, as somebody who's been on the inside for 6 years, that you have a great group of men and women that are extremely passionate about providing great service to this community. So you guys should feel very fortunate. And I'm sure I don't have to tell many of you that the level of service they provide is unmatched in this county and mostly in the state. So you guys have excellent service, and you have a bunch of excellent guys and gals that that love doing it. So anyway, thank you, guys.
At this time, we had a request that some members of the public had a few things that they wanted to say. But before that, I did want to chime in that the level of service that we are provided, that we get from our CAL FIRE group here, is without match anywhere in the county. And if you notice, over the past 6 months or so, there's been a lot of turmoil with fire departments, with a lot of the unincorporated communities in this county. A lot of them are struggling, but you never heard about Los Osos in any of those articles. And that's because I think we have paid attention to detail. We've got dedicated people here, and I want to say thank you very much for the level of service you provide for our community. And now, anyone from the public that had anything they wanted to add?
Richard Margetson. Good start, Chuck. That absolutely was going to be part of my comment. I just want to say that the district's gone through numerous general managers, a couple of fire chiefs, but there's only been, to my knowledge, two administrative assistants at the fire department since CAL FIRE came to this community. And I know for a fact from our longtime Chief Phil Vanaris that Harmony and the previous administrative assistants were instrumental in making sure that all of the little things were taken care of, that the budget was always adhered to, that reserves were where they're supposed to be, the administrative draw was always a concern. Advocating for this community to keep us at the position we are with the highest level of emergency response in the county. And we're, like Chuck said, we're not part of any of those discussions that the county's having. We should be very proud of that. But it's people like Harmony that's kept us on that road to always providing that service. I've never given a comment about Harmony at the microphone in 6 years she's here, so I felt this was the time we're going to miss her. There's a lot of historical knowledge leaving when she leaves tonight. So I hope if you have questions down the road, she's willing to pick up or take a phone call if you need some background on something that might be of interest from the past. We should be very proud of what those people and these guys behind us have done for this community. Thank you.
Good evening, I'm Julie Tacker, and I too want to recognize the new chief. Thanks for coming. Thanks for being part of our community. It was with great sadness that I learned that Harmony was going to leave us, but I get it. Life takes you different places, and I wish you well. What you didn't say when you were up there, and I'll say it for you now, is thank you to your family. Your kids and your husband supported you when we had weekend issues, late evening meetings, and that's where it all stands. You got to have that family support behind you. And not only do you have the family support, but every one of you dressed in blue or wearing a badge has family support, and I really appreciate all of those families that make your job easier so that you can serve all of us. Same goes for the board. It really does. So, thank you, everybody.
Tom Wright, Fire Safe Council. I just wanted to thank Harmony for the work she's done in the community. Let's see, toy drives, fire safety fair. We might have to change the name of that to the memorial. No, I just wanted to say thank you, Harmony. You'll be missed. As the Fire Safe Council, we look forward to working with Carrie and the new chief and continue on the good works for Los Osos. Thank you.
Okay, I'm not seeing any further public comment. We'll bring it back to the board, and I'll do one last little bit of bragging. Oh, we have more? Okay. Oh, okay. For comment, items not on the agenda. That'll be next. One last little bit of bragging. I think this really points out the place that we're at compared to some of the other communities around here. When it was time to buy a new vehicle, we had the cash to pay for it. We put the money aside. We didn't have to go out and get it on credit. So that speaks to how this department's run, and I appreciate everybody's efforts to make those sort of things happen. Okay, next, we have a presentation regarding the limited obligation refunding bonds wastewater assessment district number 1. And we have some outside help that's going to make that presentation for us.
Good evening. It's a pleasure to be here. We always like these kind of presentations because we've had some very nice results from the refunding of the bonds, and I'd like to go through the highlights of that today. We've got Nikki Tallman and Rick Brandes here from Brandes Tallman, who were the underwriters of the bonds and did an outstanding job in a somewhat volatile market to produce some extremely positive results. And so what I'd like to do... Oh, am I doing this right? Oh, roll it is easier. Okay, good. It was easier doing the bonds than it was doing the presentation.
Yeah.
There we go. Okay, so to go through, I thought what I would do is just hit the highlights of the results of the refunding. So we refunded the bonds, the 2002. We generated, to get to the bottom line right away, we generated $2 million in debt service savings. Over the life of the issue, we generated annual savings on the debt service payments of $137,000 a year, and the actual assessment payment savings, what the property owners have to pay, are saving $124,000 a year. We were able to get an increase in the rating. Remember, at one point, the rating was suspended, withdrawn, reinstated at triple B minus, and we got an A rating on the an A minus rating on the bonds, which enabled us to have a market program where Brandes Tallman was able to do a very successful marketing of the bonds. We also eliminated the $247,000 that was owed by the district to the reserve fund, which, as you know from the last presentation, was underfunded. What we were able to do in this refunding, because of the outstanding job that they did and the rates that we were able to use, to fully fund the new reserve fund. When we were here last time, and I'll show that in a minute, I think we were estimating that we would start out with around $500,000 in the reserve, build that to around $800,000, and then ultimately get to the full reserve requirement. We start out with the reserve requirement at $1 million. That's the district's money, the deal's money that's sitting there in the reserve will be used as the final payment on the bonds if there are no shortfalls along the way, which there most likely will not be. So it's very positive, additional positive result that we weren't really anticipating when we were here January 10th. We also made sure, as we talked about in the last presentation, that the total number of assessments, because of some assessments that had not paid off, had not led to retirement of bonds, we were able to have the remaining assessments that are securing this bond issue equal, so that at the end of the time when the bonds are paid off, the assessments have all been paid off, and there will be no nor shortfall like was anticipated if the refunding had not taken place. Question came up in the last meeting about that we hadn't shown the cost of issuance. Remember, I came up at the end and kind of went through the list for you. We now, these are the final cost of issuances, and I'll point out in a minute that we I think it ended up being actually lower than what we were anticipating when we were here January 10th. The municipal advisor, that's my firm, was paid $45,000. The bond council was paid $58,000. the Disclosure Counsel. That's the same bond firm. One part was to do the bond documents. The Disclosure Counsel did, if you remember, that POS, that big, thick document that showed all of the details of the transaction and all the proper disclosure. There's always a separate fee for that, and that was $30,000. Reassessment engineer, that was NBS. The original estimate, I believe, was around $30,000. They came in at $25,597. The rating is a standard fee for, depending on size, that Standard & Poor's fee of $20,500. The fiscal agent and U.S. Bank administration fee is basically the trustee fees for all the administration they do. They got paid $4,000 as fiscal agent. That's for handling the close of the transaction. And then $10,800 for the first 2 years of managing the funds as they come in and as and handling the payment of the debt service. We have a verification agent, which is for the district's protection. We have an independent firm that comes in. It's a national firm. All refundings require this. They run the numbers and say, yes, they verify that the escrow that had been set up to pay off the old bonds was proper, had enough money in it to pay off the old bonds, so that it's a total clean transaction. And then digital assurance certification, known as DAX, they're the ones that make sure that all your previous disclosures and your continuing disclosure, which the current underwriters require that that all be up to date, they do a review historically and make sure that in the OS, the official statement, it's described where there have been late filings, incomplete filings, and that the filings are now all up to date. They're probably the most reasonably priced service that I've ever seen in this business. They do a tremendous amount of work for $500. And then we have the district's counsel. That's your attorney for his fee of a little over $2,000, and then of course the underwriter's discount, which when we were here in December, I'm sorry, in January, was anticipated to be 1 point. It was then through a negotiation and through the reality of the deal, it was lowered to 8.75. For a total of $83,000. And then the printing was $2,500. There is actually $13,000 left over in the miscellaneous. And what happens with that is that this account is kept open for 6 months in case there are some unknown expenses that show up that were not billed. Highly unlikely that happens, but you always have the money there, so there can be no problem if there is a legitimate expense that got overlooked or somebody failed to file a timely invoice. At the end of the 6 months, that fund is collapsed and the money goes to pay debt service. So it stays within the deal and is used for the benefit of paying debt service. Now this is this will be my last page to go over. I want to turn it over then to Nikki and Rick. The first column on the left is the results that we anticipated on the bond issue January 10th when we were last here, and I'll just highlight a couple of items. We thought the true interest cost was going to be, we were estimating it at 3.44%. That's the basic interest, average interest rate for the entire, over the life of the bond. The all-in true interest cost right below it is 3.74. That's the interest cost on the bonds when you add in all the costs of issuance and all of the other costs. So it's really what we call an all-in cost to the district. Is an average of 3.74. This is the projections that we made. We thought the initial reserve would be at $250,000 and that the initial savings would be $1,371,000 in cash flow savings. The net present value, which is the thing we always have to calculate by regulation, would have been $1,035,000, and the net present value savings percentage was estimated to be 8.63. You might remember, if you were at that meeting, you adopted a debt management policy, and in that debt management policy, the guiding level of savings was at least 3%. Anything below 3%, you had to have like a special reason for doing it. Over 3% is considered a good refunding. We were anticipating an 8%. Now, if you look at the middle column, that's something that's called the preliminary pricing. And I'll let Rick explain a little bit more about the process when we get to the final pricing. But basically what happens is from the time you approve the deal January 10th, and the preliminary official statement was then distributed to the public and to all potential buyers, they've been active. Brandis Tallman was active marketing the bonds. After spending a week or two marketing, we have a call. They had a call with me, and we went over where they thought the market was the day before they would be doing the final pricing. And so we ran the numbers as of that day. And as of that day, the interest rate, we thought that the true interest rate would now look like it was going to be 3.13% instead of 3.44. The all-in was going to be 3.39 instead of 3.74. The savings were going to be $1.9 million instead of $1.3 million. And the percentage on the net present value was going to be 15% instead of 8%. The next day, we had the pricing call, which was then followed by the bond purchase agreement, where Brandis Tallman actually purchased the bonds, completing the sale. And these are the final numbers that the sale produced. So the true interest cost, remember, we started out at 3.44, ended up 3.10. The all-in interest cost at starting at 3.74% ended up at 3.37%. The cost of issuance, including the underwriter's discount, January 10th, we were estimating $349,000. It ended up at $299,000. The initial reserve deposit, which started out to be $250,000, ended up being $565,000. And the total reserve fund, that's the deposit that went in, the total reserve fund ended up being $1,022,000, which is the required reserve account for this particular bond issue. The total cash flow savings, which again started at $1,372,000 estimate, ended up at $2 million, touch over $2 million, for an average of $137,000 a year, as I already pointed out. And the final net present value savings ended up at 15.33%. That's the percentage of the original bond issue that the $2 million savings represents. That's what that figure indicates. What I'd like to do before I'll let Nikki and Rick go over this, I'd like Rick to talk about, because I think it's very interesting and important for the public to appreciate, that the levels that were finalized truly represent the best that could be obtained in this market. And I'll let Rick talk about that process.
Thank you, Bud. Hi, I'm Rick Brandis, and I am the underwriter for the firm. And as Bud mentioned, the district received an upgrade in the rating, and that created a great platform to go into pricing. On the day of pricing, what we do, after about two weeks of marketing the bonds, we prepare an order period where on the day of pricing, we set a finite time period for investors to put in orders. During that period, we ask for them to provide how many bonds they want to buy. And at that point, the order period went very well. We had great demand for your credit. The assessment district had a rating upgrade of an A-, and that allowed us to start thinking about repricing the bonds more aggressively. So from the day before on January 30th to January 31st, the demand came in on the morning of the 31st, where a lot of maturities were oversubscribed, meaning we had more orders than bonds. That created a window for us to lower the interest rates on really every maturity. So a lot of the time on a bond issue, we will reprice several maturities when we get oversubscribed. But on your bond issue, we actually repriced every maturity. And part of it was predicting where the market would be the day before and what kind of demand we would have, and we ended up with even more demand than we predicted. Right. On every maturity, we were at least two times oversubscribed. So for your issue was about 10,800,000. We actually had orders for, on average, for well over 20 million. On an average per maturity of at least two times. On some maturities, three or four times. So that's why the end results provided a better savings than we had predicted the day before. But going into the pre-pricing, we estimated our demand from talking to investors, and we work with every kind of investor that you can imagine, individuals, money managers and investment advisors, and mutual funds. And every class of investors showed interest in this bond issue. And as an underwriter, we never know if they will come in on the morning of the order period. And that's why, as an underwriter, our job is to underwrite the risk. So if we don't sell all the bonds, or even half the bonds, we still sign and commit to buying all the bonds. And that's what we do. We take the risk, bringing the bonds in, and then selling them later, regardless of market conditions. But on the day of the 31st, we ended up having great demand. And it worked out in the favor for the property owners, saving more money than we expected the day before or even the day of the board meeting. Any questions about the process? Okay. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Nikki Tolman. It's nice to be back. I'll be very brief. This is just, again, a recap of the savings. We compare the prior bond debt service to the refunding the new bond debt service, and the savings are estimated at approximately $137,000 per year. Again, in total, $2 million. We present value those savings based on the arbitrage yield on the new bonds, and, again, we're about $1.8 million 15% NPV, which is significant. It's really a great story to tell for the amount of savings captured. The second slide is the savings to the property owners in the assessment district. It's a little different than comparing bond to bond. We're comparing lien to lien, and this shows the solving of the debt variance that we had going into the refunding. If the bonds were not refunded, a debt variance would have continued to occur, and we solved that here. So the savings to the property owners are approximately $124,000 per year, in total $1.7 million. And these are the numbers reflected in the final reassessment report, which is now available. So we can answer any questions that you have. The three of us are available.
Before we do that, I wanted to do one thing to clarify on the reassessment report. Any of you who have seen the preliminary official statement and now the official statement, the original reassessment report, and I think I went into that in pretty good detail in the last meeting, is still attached to that official statement. There wasn't time between the time the bonds were sold for NBS to do a complete copy before. There's legal requirements of how quickly the official statement has to be distributed to the investors that have purchased the bonds. So a few days later, the full reassessment report has been updated. And if you print it out, just so you can see, it kind of looks like this. And there's 4,000 assessments that are in here. Now, any of you or any property owner that would like to know how that savings of $1.7 million relates to their property, NBS put together a very good program that is available at the district. The reassessment report is there. And as I said, it looks like this. And there's a program, an Excel program, that is available at the district, and I guess available online. You can send that to them, Renee had indicated. And it prints out the property owners like this. And over here is the APN number, and right next to it is the name of the owner. So either by putting in the name of the owner or the APN number, and one file is organized by number, going increasing numerically. The other is alphabetical. So when you put in your name, you would read across the page, and there's a page number that's listed here. That page number relates to a page number in the reassessment report. And, for example, let's say the page number is page 105. There's a lot of 105s. And this isn't 105. Let me get to 105. Here. Pretty fast. And it looks like this. And what happens is, here are the payments that the bond that the lot owner has been paying, with the total over the life of the old bond. And here's the list of the payments that they would be making on a yearly basis over the life, with total savings in this last column. Here's the savings per year for this particular assessment, and here's the total for this particular assessment. So if you happen to be, and there's maybe 20 of them that would relate to, because of the same amount as a 105, this particular property owner would save $332 over the life on a $2,000 bond over the life of the issue, and an average yearly saving of $24 on a $2,000 assessment. So anybody that wants to see their results, they can see that. It's there at the district and online. So now, any questions from any of this that we went over tonight?
Questions here? No.
Okay. Well, it's been a pleasure working with the district. You guys have been terrific. Staff has been outstanding. And
I think Julie was... Usually we take board questions and there are no board questions, but
okay.
I think
we're going to go to public comment in just a second.
Okay,
here.
Sure.
So stick
sure.
around,
great.
Please.
Absolutely. We're here.
Yeah, at this point we'll go to public comment.
Thank you for all the work that everybody put into this. It is appreciated. Lindy Owen, I wanted to... one thing that I think is missing in this is we talk about bonds and money and increases, and but what I do want to remind everybody, this is for the prior Tri-W site. It was engineering, design, purchase of some of the Broderson plans, and all of it has resulted in basically an 11-acre public park that we also pay to maintain. So I think that we should also continue to think of that as something that we're purchasing as a community, those of us in the prohibition zone. Anybody that had anything to do with the sewer is partial owner of that property, even though we're not. And so also I just thought, I noticed in the handout that we can all enjoy a 10% decrease each year. So in your taxes, when you see the tax thing, it'll be $24 or approximately 10%. So that could simplify how we look at it. So thank you.
Julie Tacker, in the very last part of the presentation, was exactly what I was looking for, and it was that reassessment number and the latest reassessment report. I didn't find it on the district's website. Maybe I just missed it. It's not available yet, or is it on there?
I will check. I'll double check, but we have a box where I have that.
Okay, so whenever it's available, I certainly wanted to look at it. I don't enjoy splitting hairs, But when something pops off a page at me, I have to ask why. And it has to do with the NBS contract and the reassessment engineer. The total cost for them was $25,597.29. If you'll recall, your board ratified that contract in January when your board president, Vicki Millage, had entered into that contract without your board approval. That was the board president acting unilaterally. That was a $24,000 contract. That was a not to exceed. So I don't know how that happens when something exceeds what a contract states. So it is $1,500, $1,600. It's not a big deal in the big scheme of all of this. It's about procedure, and it's about transparency, and it's about principles and ethics and what matters. And so, you know, I expressed the heartburn in how that was entered into, and then it turns out it's not even what you've signed. It's not even what you did. So that bothers me a lot. But access to the reassessment report should have been available when this agenda was posted. And I went to the Finance Committee. I heard board members talking about how this big 350-page document was in their email boxes, but it wasn't attached to the staff report today. So it's just about transparency, and somehow things fall out of here.
Is it possible for me to answer that question?
Yeah. Sure.
You're absolutely right. There was a contract. But, however, the board resolution allowed the official signers of the documents to do whatever is necessary to complete the transaction. And as it turned out, we needed a very fast action by NBS. They worked on weekends. I'm just explaining what happened. They then requested if they could increase, if I remember correctly, Renee, wasn't that right, that Sarah had requested if she could add a little more to the contract because of all the extra work. I can tell you as the financial advisor, and I think the underwriters will back me up, without her fast action, this could not have come to market when it did, and it could have cost the district a lot more. So, I mean, there was a reasonable reason, and I believe, now bond counsel's not here, but I believe legally that because the authorization was given to complete contracts to make the refunding successful, I guess a judgment was made that was a reasonable situation to do. So, but...
We don't need a back and forth. Thank you.
Sure. We just wanted to clarify. We just checked the website and it's there. The reception
is there. Can you say where? Because I really didn't. It's right on the home page, and if you scroll down, there's
a little box.
It should have been part of the staff. That's what I
mean. Before my time starts, can I get a slide? Put up the summary of bond savings. Okay. For the public, I would hope that the presenters could explain the refunded par amount initially was $10,460,000. When it was issued, it's $10,800,000. Explain that. And then under the initial reserve fund deposit, the initial results, preliminary results, 565. That using that to get to the required reserve also required the use of the money that the district already had in reserves, which was more than the difference between the $1,000,022 and the $565. If they could just explain that process of getting there and how the numbers worked out, I'll leave it at that at this point.
Okay, any other public comment at this point?
They'll address that.
Yes, I understand that. Okay.
That's what he's talking about. I think there's two things here.
Yeah, sure.
To be clear. Legally, you cannot do a refunding if you have a reserve fund and you don't use it in the refunding. So you bring in the existing reserve fund to be part of the pool of money that will be used to pay off the old bonds. And then you issue enough bonds to make up the difference and to fulfill all the requirements of the new bonds. So that's why there was, I believe, $525,000 in the reserve that was brought in, that of the old reserve, or $800,000. Sure, that was brought into the refunding. That's the legal requirement. And then the money that is, and I'll let Rick, you can explain on the market.
Yeah. Part of the difference in what we call the par amount of the bonds has to do with the pricing. There are two components to a bond. There's the coupon rate and the yield. And what helped lower the interest rates and generate more savings is we lowered the coupon rate and the yield. If you lower the coupon, it creates a dollar price in the bonds at a discount. And when you do that, it creates a larger par amount. And part of the larger par amount of $10,000,008 had to do with the pricing. So by offsetting the lower coupon rate, we got more savings and made a better sale and better results. But it created more bonds, a larger issue size. I hope that makes sense.
Wasn't it fewer bonds? They're issued at a premium.
Right,
so
but
if they gave us, say, $1,200, and when we pay them back, we pay them back.
Some were issued at a premium, and some were issued at a discount. I think we added some more discounts, if I remember correctly. Is that right, Bud? We added more discounts on the longer maturities.
But what's important is the yield.
Correct. So the market is based on the yield level, not on the coupon.
Wouldn't the result be the NPV? Isn't that where the proof is that we did a good job?
Correct.
Because
that's right.
Coupon yield, and you're bringing it all back to present value.
Correct. So we increased the NPV savings by lowering the price on some maturities and to lower the coupon.
Also, I believe on the reserve, there were some assessment payoff money that was discovered that hadn't been applied yet that was brought into the refunding. Since the bond size had already been sized, that money, instead of going to pay down bonds, went into the reserve fund because there's no other place to put it. It can't be just paid anywhere. So there's certain rules and requirements of what you do with the money that is generated through the refunding. All of the money was used for the benefit of the district, which is why, and for the benefit of the assessment payers. No money, as you can see, was used for additional fees or additional costs or whatever. So that, I think, should explain. That's a very positive thing. I think everybody in the market that looked at these bonds were very happy that you had started with a full reserve account, which we were able to do because of the excess funds that had been in there, starting with the $800,000 that was put into the refunding legally. You have to do that. You cannot do anything else with that reserve.
Any further questions? Okay, thank you.
I have a comment before we wrap up.
Okay.
So, I have to say, our options to refund, it was March 3rd, or we have to wait until September. And the savings in a year are $130,000. So I do think that weighed much more heavily than splitting hairs on process for 1.5 one, I mean, one's 10 times bigger than the other. What we're looking for is the benefit to the taxpayer, and it just far exceeds. We didn't break the law. So I just, we were paying $130,000 on average more than we need. So let's not do that.
Can I just ask a question before I say something? All the items that were listed as expenses were actually paid out of the funds. So the district didn't pay the $25,000. So the district's contract that we did, and because we had to do it in order to have the possibility to get this done, exposed the district to a risk of a contract of $24,000. In fact, the work that was done was paid out of the bond funds and not from the district general fund. So it's somewhat apples and oranges. And so to the extent that it seems like they got something more than they promised, it's because their relationship at that point in time ends up being with the bond and the underwriters and not with the district. So, yes, we took some risks. Sometimes we at staff level do that when we think the benefit outweighs the risks.
Oh, and I just also want to again express appreciation to the team we hired for getting the ball rolling. I know our bond counsel was working on Christmas Day to get it done, and I want to give some appreciation to Renee, who had to work on the audit and had this on top and had a tremendous workload, and thank you for all your work.
Okay, with that, we'll move on to public comment for items not on the agenda. So this is probably what you've been waiting for.
Good evening, Board. My name is Nancy Bast, and I'm a resident of Morro Bay. And as you probably know, we are also in the throes of building a new sewer. And even though we're in Morro Bay, there's some aspects that greatly affects Los Osos. And we'd like to talk to you about that tonight. I'd like to pass around this one photograph, aerial photograph, of the route that the piping will take. It's not entirely accurate. They haven't come up with a new photograph, but the route is for the piping is on Quintana, and it will turn left on South Bay Boulevard and go under the highway bridge. And this is how it will affect Los Osos. According to Caltrans, there are between 13 and 14,000 daily trips, vehicle trips on that South Bay Boulevard to the on-off ramps, and that will be completely closed off. You have only two ways to get out of Los Osos. South Bay Boulevard to the freeway is one, and Los Osos Valley Road the other. And any way you look at it, it's going to be a real mess because that area where the pipes will turn onto South Bay Boulevard and go up the hill will go under the freeway, and we have no idea how long that will happen. Now, you have school buses that go to the middle school, and you have people bringing their high school students to Morro Bay. It'll be an absolute mess, and we implore you to send letters to our city council to ask them for a different route. It's going to be I don't know how long that street will be torn up. There's a question about the equipment underneath the actual freeway bridge, whether it will they will even be able to fit under there to load dirt and debris onto trucks. There are so many questions that have not been answered by our council. Thank you very much. I hope you'll take this into consideration and alert somebody about this problem.
Thank you very much. Do we get to keep the photo?
No, I'll take that.
Send us a copy, please. I think any materials presented here, we should have a copy of for our records.
Sure.
And those numbers, too, would be good.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Linda Donnelly. I'm from Morro Bay. Been working on our... we've been hearing about your sewer for 30 years, some years, so you get to hear a bit about ours. And real soon, the city of Morro Bay will be having four pipelines installed on South Bay Boulevard for its new water reclamation facility. The four pipes range in size from 8 inches to 16 inches in diameter. The pipeline route runs the entire length of Quintana Road and from Main Street to South Bay Boulevard and goes north over up South Bay Boulevard under Highway 1 and then the new facility behind Casa de Flores. Delays resulting from the installation of the pipelines are expected, and a detour route will most likely have everyone go through the Morro Bay State Park, through town, and then somehow get to Highway 1. Those of you who take Highway 1 and routinely get off at South Bay Boulevard might find another way to find another way to Los Osos. This latest concept was not included in the city's environmental impact report certified by the city of Morro Bay last August and was not even a consideration in the traffic study prepared for that environmental impact report. Not even Caltrans has had the opportunity to comment on this latest concept route as it will be entering their jurisdiction within Highway 1. Residents of Los Osos will be adversely affected by this and should demand that the county remain a part of their permitting process for the new facility so the public can be heard. Otherwise, the California Coastal Commission will decide without any local say in the matter. And what I mean by that is that the city of Morro Bay is going for a consolidated permitting process, which would leave the citizens of Morro Bay and Los Osos no route to appeal their concerns other than to the Coastal Commission. Bypassing the ability to speak our concerns to agencies like Caltrans, the Board of Supervisors, County Planning Commission, Regional Water Quality Control Board, and so forth. If your community has concerns about the disruption of traffic flow for your high school and junior high children, let alone trying to go northbound via Morro Bay, you should be at the April 8th Coastal Commission meeting to petition, and which is local, to petition your concerns about the consolidated permit. Having the Coastal Commission be the only place to speak our concerns limits our rights as citizens to be heard at any of the aforementioned boards so they understand our two communities' traffic plights. If we don't have the ability to appeal to these, and Coastal Commission is the only place, you know that they are only locally here once or twice a year. Morro Bay is fast-tracking this project, and that is why we are coming here tonight to ask for your support as a community, because it does affect you and your children and your daily lives. Quintana will be ripped up for we don't even know how long, impacting over 80 businesses in our own town and where you might shop as well. Thank you.
What was the date of that hearing? The 8th?
I believe it's April the 8th.
April 8th. And where was it going to be?
Is it?
Okay. Local, though. Okay.
Oh, it's the 10th through the 12th?
It's
the 10th
through the 12th.
Sorry. So, I'm sure their website.
Okay, thank
but
you.
But it's local, and it's coming up real fast. Thank you.
Any other public comment for items not on the agenda? Oh, there we go.
Hi. My name is Karen Aguilar, and I'm here with my two colleagues who really are the numbers people. In all this. They're the gals that get into the weeds and they know all the acronyms and everything. I'm new to Morro Bay. I've been here for about a year and I'm a transplant from the Valley. I'm sure that raises the hair on some of the back of your necks. But my husband and I moved here because we absolutely love this little community. And what I've seen in terms of connecting the dots is that, and I've been asked to come and talk about the environmental impact of the estuary. How in the world can you pump for 3 miles upstream raw sewage and tell the community that's going to be safe? And the side effects of what if it isn't safe? How is that going to impact? It's not only going to impact Morro Bay, but it also is going to impact Los Osos. But the bigger picture, and I've been sitting here through the meeting trying to see, and I'm looking at that beautiful picture that's behind the council and the beauty of that picture, the greenery and stuff, and the unbelievable real estate that has not been developed yet. And that is really the elephant in the room. This is what's not being said. Okay, like I said, my friends here can talk about the weeds. I look at the bigger picture. Okay, Morro Bay wants to do a sewer system to the tune of $127 million for a current population of 10,000. Okay, Cayucos is doing it for $25 million for a population of 5,000. Where do those numbers and how in the world do they add up? Except that maybe these guys that are running the show right now see the possibility of this being the next Newport Beach. And maybe before that, it'll be the next Pismo Beach. Okay? Prime real estate. So when you're driving from Los Osos to Morro Bay, think about the real estate that's right behind the estuary and how will that impact the estuary. Think of your grandchildren and your great-grandchildren that haven't been born yet. This is a community of generational people. This is a tight community. I love coming over here to Los Osos. I come to the market every Monday. You guys have the best farmers market ever, and the people are just amazing. We will change the whole trajectory of this community if we just allow something like this to happen. And so we're coming over here to talk to you guys because we need your help. This is not going to just affect Morro Bay. This is going to affect you guys. Okay? So I thank you for your time today, and I just wanted to share my thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lindy Owen, we've been there, and it is a horrible feeling to be assaulted with solutions that don't seem reasonable, and the only saving factor is that we really don't have water for a lot of growth. So that's, I mean, even with all the rains, if we continue to have this kind of rain seasons every winter, we still wouldn't have enough water for any kind of expanded growth. So I think, if anything, protect your basins definitely as much as possible. I wanted to kind of speak a little bit to the whole, I mean, we are paying $225 a month for an average home, I believe, to be purchasing and paying for all the damage that was done for trying to put a sewer in the middle of town many years back. And gladly, I'm just glad the whole thing's over, because I think it was one of the most painful experiences for our community to go through. But my point is, that is property that we are paying for. It was an error to have destroyed it in the first place. And the old CSD went ahead and broke ground and tore trees out and damaged the property to the point where we are stuck having to now also pay on our sewer bill the maintenance on that property, which is, you know, it's pulling weeds and it's keeping up trails that were never there originally. So it's another oddity that came out of our sewer. But the fact that we cannot do a library expansion onto that is absolutely insane, because it is deemed to be for community use in the near future when NHCP comes through. So at one point, the Coastal Commission agreed that the skate park could have gone on that corner property if we had been willing to go that direction, and the powers that be weren't. But I'm asking the support and the thoughts in everybody's head to consider like a half acre on the west side, I believe it would be, of the library, the east side, excuse me, to do the extent, do an expansion out there, which would be just two buildings added smack onto the existing building. And I think that we would end up with a beautiful library situation that would probably be about half of what they're anticipating at this point. So I just want us all to remember that that HCP needs to get done. It's ridiculous that it's dragged on so long. We spoke at Parks and Rec last night that we're going to ask the county, what is the darn holdup at this point? But then the library also is dealing with the Coastal Commission, which hopefully would consider that they could adapt and amend the final plan on Tri-W to allow a half acre to go towards library needs. Thank you.
Lynette Tornatsky. I found something online that looked like it was really good news for us, and I could not really quite figure out where we are in this project. It's called the Qualitative Metric Results and Costs for Identified Project and Programs, Second Street Baywood Green Street Project. It looks like we had more than three identified attributes on the primary concerns, and it looks like we're in really good shape to get some money. So if anybody knows anything about that, I can give this to Ann. And please pass it down. Anything you could tell me about that would be great. Thanks.
Any other public comment for items not on the agenda? Okay, with that, we'll bring it back to the board. And move on to administrative and committee reports. Fire department report, finally.
Good evening, board of directors. First off, I'd like to introduce Chief John Owens. He's assistant chief, and he's division chief of the coastal response for CAL FIRE.
Welcome.
Kerry, thank you for preparing the report. All right, your Station 15 firefighters responded to 119 calls between January 24th and February 26th. During that time frame, we had 72 medical aids, 9 traffic collisions, 4 incident reports as fire, 5 as hazardous, 14 as public service assist, and 6 false alarms. Company 15, the firefighters, reserve firefighters, were called to cover Station 15 a total of 9 times. So that was good. Administrative business. February 13th, reserve firefighter Maxwell Palmer retired from Station 15 after 2 years. He moved on to Ventura City as he was now hired with them as a firefighter. So we wish him the best, and we are currently we have another firefighter through our training process now. Harmony retired on February 28th, and you know, we had a celebration for her at the station, and I wanted to say, you know, we couldn't be here today without her, and it's been great having her the last 6 years, and the last few weeks having her there to catch up on everything has been great. Thank you. Special program. Station 15 hosted a birthday party for a local 4-year-old this last go-around, and he was winner of the Stamp Station game and during our annual fire safety fair. So during his time frame at the station, we had great food, pizza, and we sent him home with great gifts. We want to say thank you to our local citizen, Tom Wright. He installed a public library box in front of Station 15, so if you guys come by, take a look. It's a great addition to the community. And during Harmony's going away party, we had a noise catered to the station, so it was great having them there. Training news, we have 3 prospective reserve firefighters that have finished the training, and they're finally a part of Los Osos. They completed all the necessary steps, and they are employees of the Los Osos CSD. We welcome Jonathan Huffman, Kelby Jecker, and Matthew Westbrook. And like I said earlier, we have 1 firefighter going through the training to replace the firefighter that has currently left. End of report. Any questions for me?
Any questions from the board? No. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Sheriff's Department.
Good evening. Michael Manuelli, Commander, Sheriff's Coast Station. Tonight's report is for February 2019. Los Osos had 534 calls for service. compared to 505 last year, an increase of about 6%. Compared to some of our other communities, Avila had 70, Cayucas had 137, Cambria 283, San Simeon 55. Just for statistical purposes, I haven't given you this number before, but the Coast Station here in Los Osos, handling all the beats, including Avila, Los Osos, Cayucas, Cambria, had 1,811 calls for service for that month alone. Back to Los Osos, those reports, calls for service generated 65 reports, a drop of about 4%. There were 6 calls for service regarding assaults and batteries, generating 6 reports. We had different types of calls, family fight, domestic violence, student fight at the school. And then the one that drew a lot of publicity, we had the assault with a deadly weapon resulting in the stabbing in Los Osos. That case is still under investigation by our detective division. There have been no arrests made in that case at this time. We had 27 disturbances generating 1 report, 1 call for service regarding a burglary, items stolen out of a locked vehicle. We could not determine how entry was made. Our victim believed it was done with a Slim Jim. We had 6 calls for service regarding thefts. 5 of those resulted in reports. The same story that I report all the time. Most of them were from unlocked vehicles, tools stored in an unsecured bed, and an item stolen off of a porch. We had 4 vandalism calls. Two of those resulted in reports, a vehicle keyed, and some tires slashed. No mail thefts, 8 different phone scams, same kind of phone scams. I won't bore you with those. We did have 1 unusual phone scam reported to us. Somebody called identifying themselves as being with the FBI. They said that a rental car in your name had been rented in Texas, was now in Florida, and contained a large amount of drugs, and we need your personal identification. The guy said no, thankfully. He said, we're sending the police to your house. He said, okay, you're not getting my information. It was a scam. Let's see. And then we had 1 suspicious circumstances calls here in town. And that's my report for the month.
Questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Utilities Department.
Good evening, Mr. Vice President, Board of Directors, citizens of Los Osos. My name is Jose Acosta, Utility Systems Manager for the Utilities Department here with the CSD. Tonight I'll be giving you our utilities report for January 2019. We'll start with the water production information. For the month of January 2019, approximately 11.5 million gallons was produced from the well sites, and that equated to an average daily demand of approximately 372,000 gallons per day. This represents a decrease in production from last year by approximately almost 10%. Using the state's formula to calculate the residential per capita usage per day for the month of January 2019, that figure comes out to about 49.8 gallons per day per person. That is under the 50-gallon threshold that we have been striving for. And that is a decrease from 55.2 gallons per day per capita of last year. Moving on to production and runtime hours by the well sites. The chart provided explains the flows for the month of December, or the month of January, sorry, for each well site and the production this year compared to last year as well. As you can see at each well site, with the exception of well 10, there was a decrease in production from each site. Also shown in these charts are the runtime hours, which are the electrical motor readings from each well site and how long those wells ran. Again, as you can see, there are decreases at each site, most sites besides well 10, and also it looks like well 8. Moving on to the water billing information. 43% of the service area was covered during this time frame in the month of January, and that approximated to about 9.6 million gallons that was billed to the citizens of Los Osos for the period of November 7th through January 8th, and this generated approximately $195,000 in revenue during that period. Next, the utility department's operation and maintenance. The tasks that were completed during the month of January, The crew continues doing their daily, weekly, monthly water quality sampling, analysis, and reporting for all well sites and throughout the distribution system. Their monthly meter reading, collected and computed sampling for lead and copper at Los Osos Valley Middle School. Samples are returned below the action level. So we completed the required lead and copper sampling for both schools that fall within our water district, and neither site reported any limits that were above the action level. So both schools are cleared, and we're good to go at the lead and copper for both those sites. The crew attended several technical and managerial trainings. We had some electrical trainings for the crew. Our crew leader attended a supervisory class to assist with his skills and managing the crew that he has as well. They performed cleanup around non-compliant customer meter boxes. Reported several months ago that we sent out a second round of notices to customers who were being non-compliant as far as keeping the area around their meters clear of brush or debris. And so the crew went out and cleaned up all those meter boxes. They continued the residential meter replacement program, changing out 72 meters during this time. They equipped the new service truck with the required toolbox and also performed some corrective maintenance on the interiors of older trucks and the hood of the mini excavator. Service line upgrade at 1154 13th Street. So just a reminder that every time we have a service leak, something major, we do aim to replace that service line to bring it into compliance, take it away from the old schedule 40 PVC and replacing it with a better plastic service line. So they do that every time that they go out and make a service repair. They installed a fence around the sandbag sand pile. Unfortunately, we had someone who must live down the street or within the area who decided it was a free-for-all, and they'd bring their little mini loader, load up some sand, put it in their truck, and take off. And that caused some issues for some of the citizens who really, you know, needed the sandbags in the time of need. So we put a little fence around there to try to eliminate that from happening again. They assisted with the transitional move of the administrative offices as well from next door right over to Suite 110. The drainage facilities are operating properly. We had no major issues at our drainage facilities. Again, as I mentioned previously, we have done the upgrades, and they seem to be operating properly, and we're glad to say that we didn't have any major call-outs, any major issues at those sites. The rainfall totals are reported in the chart below. As you can see, as of the end of January, we had 12.25 inches. I believe as of today, we are well over 20 inches of rain. So we not only are exceeded our annual average, but we're exceeded by 3 inches and probably more before the end of this rain season comes around. That concludes my report for the month of January. Do I have any questions from the board?
I just want to comment on one thing that always jumps out at me, and it seems pretty consistent, and that has to do with the production from the different wells and those South Bay wells. It seems like runtime there for what we produce is greater than at some of the other wells, and that wells, they're just not as productive there?
So you're absolutely correct. Those wells are produce a lot less water than the other well sites, and that is going to lead to a couple topics that I'll be presenting at UAC in the coming months. One of them is a capital improvement project that we want to intertie those wells into the lower pressure zone, which will allow those wells to produce more water because they'll be under less pressure. And also, we are currently doing a cost analysis benefits on all well sites based off of their runtime, the gallons produced, the cost we use for electricity, the cost we use for chemicals at each site, and how much that costs per million gallons. So once we do that cost analysis, we'll be able to better understand which wells we should run, which ones we can let rest more. So
I will be presenting. In my mind, I'm starting to get ready for this new well that we're looking at, maybe over by the middle school, that kind of thing, and I'm wondering how far it is from the South Bay well. Are we looking at marginal quality again, you know, excessive run times for the production that we get? Just the thoughts that just run through my head.
Great thoughts. And until we get the pump test out of that well, yeah, we won't know the extraction rates.
Having dollar per gallon data is going to be really nice.
Yes.
It's electricity plus some of the wells that have the chemicals that we need. So
right. That's exactly what I'm thinking of.
Thanks, Jose.
And we had the initial report sent over today. I find Comtumde gave it back to the crew, explained to them what I'd like to see. And so we're working on that, and I'll be presenting that at UAC in the coming months as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
General Manager's report.
Good evening, board members, members of the public. This is for activity for the month of January. Admin Water and Admin Water and Fire staff have been working on the mid-year budget adjustments. This item had the final review from the Finance Advisory Committee at their February 25th meeting. If there were any additional comments from FAC, they would be brought to the board's attention during Finance Committee update, which there were, and Director Womack will bring those up. And those items were actually changed in this mid-year budget that is attached for consent. We did have enough time to make those changes that's presented in front of you. Staff has also been working on the ad hoc committee regarding the final refinancing of the wastewater bonds, all those final paperwork. And I met with the battalion chief, George Wong, and provided updates on procedures and budget and emergency services advisory committee, the district goals. And since we still had Harmony around, we kind of started on the 2019-2020 budget to get them moving on that while she was still available. And she plans on being available for them for questions. So she didn't totally leave us. She's still going to help. And request for archiving board meetings. At a previous board meeting, the board asked if a member of the public asked, and the board asked if the district board meetings could be archived. Currently, we stream the meetings live and only archive the audio on slowspan.org website. So the cost for this service is $200 per meeting plus a $250 setup fee that they're not sure yet if they're going to charge us or not. The financial impact would be $1,250 for this mid-year budget and $2,400 a year and thereafter. Unless otherwise directed, I'll add these costs to the administrative budget and go ahead and authorize AGP Video to continue streaming the live meetings and begin archiving the district board meetings in their entirety on slowspan.org. So before I go on, how do you guys feel about that? I mean, it's a lot less than we thought it might be.
I'm in favor.
I'll just keep on moving.
Yeah, so I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I have a quick question.
Yes.
So it'll be the video of these meetings,
mm-hmm.
and you go to slowspan.org, and you can
And then you can look for Los Osos.
Anytime you want.
Yep. Yes.
24 hours a day.
Okay. Yep. Yes. Okay.
Maybe that's a good idea, too.
Yes. Okay, great. Water conservation campaign. The district board, Golden State Water Company, and the Los Osos Baywood Chamber have selected the winning entries for the water conservation campaign. Those entries are in the board packet, so you can see them. The seven winners will be announced at the Chamber Business Expo to be held next week, March 14th. Please mark your calendars. March 14th at the South Bay Community Center. I believe it's from... 5:30 to 7? Check the website, and I'll get better times. So as far as the videos go, we have contacted Los Osos Middle School, and they will be providing us videos, but not until the May-June time frame, because that's when they'll start production classes. They don't have production classes this quarter. But if you're interested, right now we have... At the printing of this board packet, we had $1,500 in promised sponsorships. We're up to $1,800 now. So if anybody out there, members of the public that want to contribute, let us know. Please give a call to the Chamber of Commerce because all the donations are being channeled through them. So this is an item that I brought up last year. The county was just working on this particular issue. During the 2018 rainstorms, FEMA found all the hazardous mitigation plans in our county to be lacking in many areas. Although FEMA agreed to assist our county with financial support, the county was instructed to revise the plans and create a countywide plan, which would be more cost-effective for everyone. FEMA provided the county with a local mitigation plan review tool to help all the hazardous mitigation plans in our county. So the county conducted an RFP to assist in writing the plan and hired Wood Consulting. There was a comparison conducted by Wood Consulting of using the FEMA local mitigation plan review tool and the current HMP plans within the county, it was determined that the majority of the sections needed to be revised to meet the latest FEMA planning requirements. The county-wide HMP will have a section for each district with cost allocations based on population. Currently, the district's allocated cost will be approximately $8,000, possibly less. Staff will be attending the meetings to participate in the revision and decision-making of the county-wide HMP plan. And staff will bring the CSD, the draft portion, and to ESAC for review. That is on their work plan to do that. So as soon as they get us a draft, we'll get that to ESAC right away. They've already started providing us with forms to start filling out. I've been working on those. Then I give them to the chief for him to the battalion chief to, for him to go over, make sure I've captured everything. And that's going to be our process while they give us these forms. And then once the draft is ready, we'll bring it to ESAC, and then we'll bring it to the board for review. And if there's any other questions that the board has on anything that I touched upon or did not touch upon in my general manager's report.
Any questions?
Nope. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
LOCAC.
Hello. Lynette Tornotsky filling in for our chairperson who could not be here. I'm the secretary of LOCAC. Also, I would say get your pens and paper out as I'm giving you some dates for meetings that might be of interest to you that came up at our meeting. Senior planner, county senior planner Carrie Brown is going to hold a meeting at South Bay Community Center March 21st at 6 p.m. And it's on the First Street Encroachment Project, the Bill Lee Encroachment Project on First Street. There's been a lot of controversy back and forth on that one, so the county is holding a meeting that date. Supervisor Gibson gave his report, and they are going to be resurfacing South Bay Boulevard. That might be of interest to everybody. He says it's starting at the middle school and going across the bridge. He wasn't sure quite where it ended, and he wasn't sure exactly the date that would start, but it is coming up soon. He also was speaking about cannabis because that's something that's come up at LOCAC a few times. He said the county has an ordinance that's in place, but it's not perfect, so stay tuned on that one, apparently. Also, I'm sorry that our fire people have left, and I'm hoping that Tom Wright will be listening. Tom, this came up at LOCAC. It was a discussion of vegetation growing and causing fire hazards on county-owned, non-paved streets. The county says they are not responsible for cleaning the brush in this area, and nobody seemed to have an answer at our LOCAC meeting as to who would be responsible for clearing the brush in these streets that are not paved, but they are pretty well overgrown. So I'm hoping that information can go to the Fire Safe Council and we could get some answers on that. We had two projects on the consent agenda. One might be of interest. The same owners that had the Ale House down on 3rd Street in Baywood, they have put in for a permit to remodel an existing office building on Los Osos Valley Road to put in a new Ale House. Of course, vacation rentals was on the agenda, and that was interesting, shall we say. There's quite a lot of controversy on that topic. Also, I'd like to talk about our committees. Our Traffic and Circulation Committee meets the third Monday of each month at 5:30 p.m. At the moment, it's at the community center in the small room in back, but there was quite a discussion at our LOCAC meeting as to whether or not we would be holding the smaller meetings there. The large LOCAC meeting has moved to Sea Pines, and perhaps some of those meetings might move there too. We don't know yet. Anyway, we are studying in that committee the circulation study for all of Los Osos, all of the roads that are listed as street projects on the county list of projects. The county has a certain
prioritization of that. However, the committee is going through and reprioritizing some of these projects. Some don't seem that important and should be dropped further down on the list. The Tree and Landscape Committee meets the second Monday of each month at 6:30 p.m. at the moment. It also is at the community center in the small room. However, they're coming up with a proposal that they want to put into the community plan. It was discussed at the last LOCAC meeting. They're going to be doing a big presentation at the greening of Los Osos. That's what they're calling it. It's going to be at Sea Pines in connection with the Sea Pines Barefoot Concert Series. That will be Saturday, April 27th. So you might want to check that out to see what they would like to get in terms of trees into our community. The Land Use Committee meets at Sea Pines the first Monday of every month at 7 p.m. And the Outreach Committee is urging everybody to sign up for our twice-a-month newsletters. Just go to our website, go to the MailChimp logo, and sign up. That way you will get the latest information from LOCAT twice a month. And maybe, I don't know if there's any update from Chris here on the LOCAC meeting room situation. If that's possible, we would like to hear it on TV because this goes out to a lot more people than our little LOCAC meetings. Our next LOCAC meeting is March 28th at 7 p.m. at Sea Pines, and you can get the information at our website, locac.info. Thank you. Any questions?
I don't have a question, but I did go to the community center, and we may keep the two meetings, traffic and circulation, at the community center, but I was hoping to negotiate a reduced rate since we're just using the small meeting rooms, and I guess I'm supposed to talk to Chuck about it, who's on the board of the community center. So it's kind of going up the chain, so I'm trying to figure out the options.
Thank you.
But they might stay. For this month, they're
going to stay. That's good to know. Good to get the word out, because more people that can show up at our meetings, the better.
Chamber. I don't see anyone from the chamber here tonight. Like I said, I don't see anyone from the chamber here tonight. So, Fire Safe Focus Group.
Tom Wright, Fire Safe Focus Group, Los Osos Focus Group. We welcome the new chief. Not here. Look forward to working with him, and we will. I talked to him before the meeting, and we're getting together. At February's meeting, we had a great discussion, very informative, with the supervising ranger of county parks. And the majority of the conversation was the we call it the Monarch Grove Project. It's our project to reduce the hazardous fuels in the Monarch Grove area, which we consider from the dunes, the state park property on the west, all the trees where the monarchs hang out, up to Sunset Terrace and Cabrillo Estates area. So that green belt on the picture on the west of Los Osos, we're considering that the Monarch Grove area, and that's our project, and County Parks is full speed ahead to help us with that. Cabrillo States is holding a FireWise community kickoff meeting at the South Bay Training Center, CAL FIRE Training Center, and that's Saturday, March 30th at 10 a.m. So everybody interested, find out about that. The next meeting of the Los Osos Focus Group is Monday, March 18th, right here in this very room. And we'll be discussing a variety of topics. Are we going to have a chipping event this year in Los Osos? That's one of our topics. The Las Encinas Project, now that we know who owns the land of the area that we want to do the cleanup in between Las Encinas, Tierra, Del Mar, there's a green belt, and lo and behold, the CSD is the landowner. So we're looking forward to moving forward with that project without any issues. And I have the note about LOCAC, who's responsible for vegetation management, the landowner.
So the landowners on either side of the unpaved road, because I don't imagine there's bushes in the middle of the road, but the private landowners are responsible for maintaining safe fire reduction zones around their house. If they talk to their insurance agency, it's 100 feet, 300 feet. So it's up to the landowner. Any questions? Thank you.
Are you saying that it's up to the landowner to go off of their property onto the county property to maintain?
No, sir. The Fire Safe Council's goal is the private landowner maintains his own property. I maintain my property.
Right.
He maintains his. We have no fire issues because we're both maintaining our property. If there's an unpaved road in between us, I maintain my go out my vegetation on my side of the road. He does his vegetation on his side of the road. There's no problem, is there? Because now there's whether it's unpaved or paved, there's a fuel break right in the middle. So if I allow my vegetation to encroach into that public right-of-way, who should take care of that property? Who should clean up that vegetation?
Okay, I'm just conjecturing, because, I mean, there's no way you get 100 feet of clearance. You're way off of your property.
Correct. That's an insurance thing, 100 feet. Cal Fire would
like
to have 100 feet.
Right.
It's impractical if you have 25-foot wide lots to have 100 feet. That's the reality of here.
Yeah.
But the vegetation in the right-of-way, it's, you know, who's the landowner up to that right-of-way? Well, they're responsible for their own property. Now, if the county land, if there are bushes in the middle of the road, that's county public works, right? I'm guessing. They say they're not.
According to the county, no, it isn't. It won't go on unpaved street. I'm talking about Pismo, that little pathway by Sweet Springs.
Right.
Just, you know, Chuck, you know that area. It's clogged.
Well, you couldn't maintain it without a habitat conservation plan.
There we are.
There we go.
Okay. Any day now. It'll be here any day now. Thank you, Tom. Utilities Advisory Committee report. You'll actually see one in your packet. I think the big thing that we worked on was looking at the issue of the people that have had large bills due to leaks, and so that brought up a whole issue about reviewing the water shortage contingency plan and then Title II of our district code, and there was a large discussion at UAC, and no one really seemed... We recognize that we can't just arbitrarily grant relief and just say to people, yeah, we'll let your leak go or your charges go because we're sorry for you. Yeah, nobody wanted to go down that road and start making these on a case-by-case basis. But there was some interest in perhaps easing some of the pain, maybe by looking at the way we charge the different tiers. And so the rate subcommittee will be looking at Title II to look at a different way of maybe applying the tiered rates for some of those leakages. And then I see Jose has already gotten back to us with some revisions on the district water shortage contingency plan that we asked staff to look at. And basically that had to do with looking at the triggers for when we back out of the level of 3 severity. You know, right now we've got our drought conditions going on, and we had a set of criteria for when we backed out of the level of 3 severity. And some of it looks like it could be triggered by this rainfall this year. And so we want to be very careful about just how quickly we back away from that level of severity 3. And so we're having the committee look at that again. And the staff help us with that contingency plan. Because that's something you want to be very careful about. I mean, everybody's happy about the rain, but I'm happy to see that, that consumption is still down. I noticed that the last time we had a good rainy season, consumption went up the next year. And so it's very important for people to remember that, especially in the community that has a groundwater basin and not surface storage, that a lot of this rain isn't necessarily, it's not filling up reservoirs for us. It's some of us getting down to the groundwater basin, but it takes a while. So keep conserving. We also looked at updating the work plan, minor change to one item, making sure that the rate study subcommittee was referenced in the work plan so they'd be included in any renewed effort to review our existing rates. Let's see. I gave a report on the Water Resources Advisory Committee meeting. I'm going to start getting more active with those. You'll see on the flip side of the UAC report, there's a little report on the RAC meeting that I went to. I didn't have time to write up notes from yesterday's. As you'll see, yeah, there was some concern about the water budget taking the hit for the personnel settlement, but I think we found a way to resolve that by using the property taxes and not the rate payers' revenues. So, any questions on the Utility Advisory Committee report? Okay, we will go on to Parks and Recreation Committee report.
Okay, we had our meeting on Tuesday, which was my first meeting, and we concentrated on developing our work plan, but we did provide, you know, we got updates on the ongoing project, which really is the dog park right this minute, and we had a lot of discussion revolving around the HCP and lack of an HCP. So one of the things that came out of that was, you know, the recent delays and recent staff changes at the county for that, which I guarantee this is not the only committee. I mean, the whole community is waiting for this. So I'm thinking maybe instead of have, you know, make sure that we have one voice maybe talking to the county about that instead of having a whole, you know, whole slew of us. That might be something we consider as that impacts everybody's timelines on projects. So what that means for the dog park is some more delays, and the dog park is in the work plan. We'll go over that later in the work plan section, but essentially we want to get some details and have a total scope and budget so we know what we would need for the dog park so we can concentrate on other opportunities in parallel. Some of those, then we had a good discussion about other park and rec opportunities. We talked about previous studies that had been done by the county, by the board, by our community about what the people of Los Osos want. So that's also on our work plan, is to review those, refresh everybody. And then we had a good discussion about potential opportunities that committee was excited about. A couple of the main things that came out of that were pocket parks. There's an emphasis on pocket parks. And also on looking at ways to improve trails and paths throughout town, you know, on some of the dirt throughways, which seem like attainable goals while we're going forward. And that's the summary of our meeting. We got a work plan set up, and we're excited to move forward and hopefully come back to the board with some ideas and scopes and budgets and ask for some implementation.
Any questions from the board? I guess I'm curious, because that the Habitat Conservation Plan question has to come up every meeting the county goes to around here. And they haven't given any kind of a a real update on... I mean, there has to be some news at some point. Well, okay, that's 35 days, but this has been going on for years.
I did give the Parks and Rec a update because I called, you know, regarding the dog park and our budget, and we were going to take that out and such. I did call the county, and they did give that job to somebody else. I spoke to that person. They weren't completely aware that the job was given to them, so that was a surprise to that person. Then they said, well, what would you like to know? You know, maybe I know. And so, in short, HCP next year.
Yeah, I think you said handed it off to somebody
35
else.
35-day shutdown result in a year. That kind of, we need to fill that in and understand those pieces.
Any talk of a shutdown was just a convenient excuse. That did not affect the HCP in any way. Anyway, yeah, I don't know why I asked that. Just amazing. Finance Advisory Committee report.
We met on February 25th, a week early. We approved the February 4th meeting minutes. We reviewed and recommended for approval the warrant register. Financial reports through the end of January 2019 were reviewed. We made some mid-year adjustments. Proceeds from a vehicle, I believe, sold at fire were put in a one fund, but it needed to be moved to the vehicle reserve fund. I'm not sure. What's GL code?
General ledger.
Needed to be decreased by 700 per staff report. Fund 500, the committee recommended that the property tax be modified. Fund 900, the committee recommended that 6,000 under professional services and 1,500 under the legal dog park be removed, since we can't go forward with the dog park for a year. The work plan was reviewed and updated for 2019, and we recommended minor changes. Chairman Ihelski led a discussion with the committee regarding the bond refinancing, but we got the full update just now. So, any questions?
I also just wanted to add that under the items that FAC asked for me to change in the mid-year, as I mentioned, those changes were made. But I also made, while I was making those changes, I was going through the budget again, and I noticed a cell that didn't add something up correctly in the drainage portion of the budget. Those two items, there's a revised copy in there in the back for you to so it's page 3 of drainage, and so of course if that number changed there, I had to change the summary. So the summary page, copy of the summary page with that numbers is also been revised. And like I said, that those two pages are at the back of the room with that revision.
Okay, next we have appointment by Director Millage to fill a vacancy on the Financial Advisory Committee.
Yes, and if you would stand, please. This is, I'm introducing Sandra Tirillo. Did I say it right this time? Okay, thank you. She's a certified public accountant and is going to be a great addition to our Finance Committee.
Great. Thank you.
Good to meet you.
And Director Womack, I guess you were going to fill a spot on the Utility Advisory Committee.
I've got a couple meetings. I'm still working on that.
Still working on that. Okay. Director's announcements. of district and community interest, reports in attendance at public meetings, training programs, conferences, and seminars. Anybody hit any of that?
I think you went to Fire Safe Conference.
Yeah, I did. Unfortunately, I'm losing my voice, and also Tom gave the report.
I completed two trainings.
Oh, me too.
Ethics training and harassment avoidance training.
Me too.
The harassment training, and so that would be AB 1825, and then the ethics training, AB 1234. Are done.
Prompts me to ask a question. Don't we have a responsibility to take the ethics training every bit as often as the harassment training?
Every two years.
Okay.
Once within the first year, that's in service, and every 2 years thereafter.
Okay, because I just saw through the CSDA notice that ethics training is available free for the next couple of months, but I haven't had a prompt from anybody here to take it. So I'm just wondering if I'm due... I think.
I did send out an email letting everybody know
okay.
they needed to renew, and we pretty much only.
Only one?
Not just one.
Only one? Yeah. Okay.
Chuck,
there's no punishment to take it twice.
If I remember right, is in March, I'm thinking.
Okay.
So the free part, I think, ends fairly soon. Just so you know.
I think I'll be.
If the CSD Association training, if you missed that, there's lots of. Free training available on the internet from other groups,
right.
And the AB 1234 training is pretty standard. It takes 2 hours.
Yeah.
I also want to make mention that the Director Millage's Fire Safe Council Group report, the Parks and Rec Committee report, and I think FAC made it in, right?
Yeah.
That those other reports are back at the back because when we produce the board packet, it was your meetings happened after the fact, so we put those reports back there if you want to see them.
Okay, response to previously asked questions. Did we have a note of those? Okay, public comment for items on the administrative and committee reports and the consent agenda. Before, I guess, we take that, we should ask if anybody wants to pull anything for separate consideration on the consent agenda. No? Okay. Okay, public comment.
Okay, Julie Tacker, and just an observation. When we went to the open session, there was no roll call, no Pledge of Allegiance, and no moment of silence. I don't know what happened on this agenda, but it's not there. And it's just routine. I would like, this is a question, and maybe it could come back in next month, is a status report on the election lawsuit. I don't know what happened to that. And I'm sure there's some formal action, whether it's dismissed or continued or whatever. I was interested in a community or the HCP discussion and your update on that. I was looking for more detail at this time, but maybe in the future we'll get that. I'm not sure if a dog park or trails or what other improvements that you might, pocket parks, those things will all need the HCP. But what I'm not sure of is if, like other new development, you will also need the community plan to be married to the HCP and blessed by the Lord Coastal Commission before anybody lifts a shovel. So that's still a question. And so next year doesn't mean you build a dog park next year. It still could be much, much further out. With regard to your consent agenda, let me go back. Well, first, the budget adjustments, the rubber chip calculation is still wrong, and I think that budget needs to be further adjusted. I'm fully supportive of the AGP expense.
but I want you, because I'm all about transparency, but the 11G, your item on consent, to blindly support AB 510 when it's not included in your packet, I wonder if any of you looked it up and read it before you support this call to action from the CSDA. First of all, I don't believe AB 510 applies to the things that you do at this district. And in light of the computer age, you can store little bits of information. They're called megabytes, gigabytes, terabytes, all of that. There's no reason to have to dispose of public records. So I don't know that you want to sign that letter. If you don't mind, Chuck, I have one more point.
Okay, finish your thought, please.
With regard to the compensation item, there is a sentence on the staff report. It says, since this item requires a large change in the administrative budget, staff has been directed to establish funding in the 2019-20 budget. I don't see a large change because we have specified exactly what is compensatable, and that will mean that the charges go down for the majority of you, and only Marshall Ohilski's number is going to go up, and that is going to go in the fund.
Okay, any other public comment?
Richard Margetson. Chuck, I just want clarification because I haven't heard it officially. Is the rate committee now officially tasked with proceeding? Because we're in March, and if we're going to have a recommendation by the time budget season rolls around, we need to get started, and the guys are kind of asking. So we don't know if we're official yet or whatever. I know it was asked at the committee, you know, to bring it forward. I don't know if it has to actually be at board, and that we have to wait until Marshall comes back next month. And anyway, if we could find that out after I'm done.
We'll get,
And then I think we have to have a discussion with a number of people about LOCAC and the community center and the use of the community center and that contract again. And for anybody out there that's interested in this issue, I just have to remind the community that this community center is the only community center in the county that is owned by the community. We get no funding, no subsidy, no nothing from the county, state, anything. Its operations are fully funded by events, donations, ongoing rentals. The upkeep and maintenance and running of that center and having it available for groups to use at lower rates or sometimes free. The dancers that are there on Tuesday for 3 hours a day, they do it by donation. It's a venue for this community to have events at. I bet there's very few people in this community that haven't attended something there, a funeral, a wedding, an event, a fundraiser or something. If there's a way to bring LOCAC back to the center, it's additional revenue for the center. And the old contract was $100 a month for the use of the hall and the little meeting room. $100 a month. And you get that money from Gibson's budget that he provides to LOCAC. That's how it was in the past. I don't see how it isn't conducive to have him there. I know that there's people that don't go to Sea Pines because they've gone to Sea Pines a couple times and the room was so full they couldn't hear, they couldn't get a seat, whatever. Just keep in mind, this is your community center. It survives because this community supports it. The things that have happened, the upgrades, all of that were supported by this community.
Lindy Owen. I'll just add on to the discussion about using the community center for our LOCAC meetings. LOCAC stands for Community Advisory Council Meeting, not Community Golf Supporter Meeting. Unfortunately, the settings have a lot of issues, land use issues, that we're in the middle of and are ahead, and I really find it a conflict of interest to be invited at a discount to hold our meetings on the far end of town. I've asked for clarity about what would the rest of the money be used for that isn't. The money is given to the council to help with our overhead costs. We have elections every 2 years, and we have the community center costs. So if those are being changed, perhaps the money should be given back to Mr. Gibson, Supervisor Gibson, because I don't know what the other costs needed are. So when we talk about it being less expensive to go out to the golf course because he's giving us a discount, we're not taking into consideration that we actually have been compensated for the cost of that room. And I'm a big advocate for keeping it there. I think it's a community center. I think that's where the community can easily gather. It's dark and weird going out to the golf course in, you know, the winter. Again, I'm just going to bring this up because we've talked a lot about clarity and ethics, I guess. There was an appointment to fill a vacancy for the Utility Advisory Committee, number L on your 9, your administrative. And again, you had somebody that applied for that opening, and yet the head of the committee made a decision to turn that person down because there was somebody else that she had in mind. That was a month ago, 30 days ago. And here we are, that person that she had in mind, she still hasn't gotten them to be interested. So this is the kind of stuff that doesn't belong in a community organization or in a community services district. Anyway, I'll leave it at that.
Okay, we'll bring it back to the board.
Mr. Chair, if I yes. might, I think it'll be a little helpful here. In regards to what we've kind of been referring to as the rate subcommittee, I want to make sure everybody understands that if the board takes formal action to create a committee, then that's a Brown Act body, and it's going to have only noticed meetings and have to follow the Brown Act rules. There's nothing wrong with the same people who were involved last time around. They can meet anytime they want. They're not members of this board. And if they want to remain as their own basically self-formed committee, they're free to meet starting now because they're... God fucking damn it.
Could we have a quiet, please, in the room?
The Brown Act doesn't recognize a subcommittee as something different than something that has to follow a Brown Act. The only committee created by formal action of a board, of a legislative body, that can meet without following the Brown Act is an ad hoc committee consisted solely of members of the board itself.
Right.
So if this other committee has members, and I think the committee we're talking about, all three members are not members of this board. If it's created by formal action of this board, it has to follow the Brown Act. I don't care either way. It's just, if you're going to do it by formal action, let's do it and have them follow the Brown Act. If they want to meet on their own and make reports and recommendations, they're allowed to do so. You can even put them on the agendas. But
if we
formalize it, they got to follow the rules.
Right. I'm trying to remember if... they were essentially a utility advisory committee, appointed committee. Is there such a thing?
No. What they were is Marshall sort of talked about at a board meeting forming a committee, and he talked to them about it. This is the way I remember it. And they started meeting. And so we decided afterwards not to take formal action so that they could continue to work as they were working. Just like any group of citizens can get together. And Mr. Miller was donating all his time. He wasn't doing that
right.
as the district engineer. And, well, he might. I can't commit him to that, but he's free to. And like I said, I don't care which way you do it. If you want to do it formal, that's perfectly fine. It's a perfectly legal way to do it. But then that body has to follow the Brown Act. The meetings have to be noticed. I'm not going to argue from here with a member of the podium after public comment has been closed.
Okay, we'll let you. We'll continue those meetings. Do we want to formalize it into a Brown Act sort of thing, where you've got to have notices and
take minutes?
I don't think we want to do that.
No.
I wouldn't take any formal action to request them. They can reconvene themselves.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you for that. I'll be in touch.
Thank you. I just wanted to ask Vice President Cesena. I just wanted to add, I remembered we had one question on the warrant report, and it had to do with the last page, and there were it's in the payroll section, and there were two checks that were zeroed out. One was to the Employment Development Department, and one was to the Department of Treasury. And the committee had asked why that had happened. And so this is a note from Adrian that it was a journal entry to correct dates on some checks. And so basically what should have happened is those should have been actually just eliminated. They shouldn't have even showed up is all it was. So it was just something that it was an entry that was made to correct some mistake. So that's why that was zeroed out.
Thanks for the follow-up because I was curious.
Yeah.
Okay. Since you mentioned the warrant register, and I mentioned this to you briefly, I guess I was looking for also something maybe in the narrative about the mid-year budget adjustment, because I know this check was written after the January 31st reports that were generated. We spent $84,000 on self-contained breathing apparatus. We had 32 budgeted in every financial report here. Just go ahead and explain how we wound up writing that $84,000 check when we'd had 32 budgeted.
We also had an amount, and he's talking about page one, and it's about a quarter of a way down, and it's to All-Star Fire Equipment, Inc. Last year, the fire department had set aside, I think it was 50 or somewhere around that money.
32.5.
The same amount last year as in the other budget?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I think it was around 50-ish. Okay. But in either case, they did not purchase them at the time because the CAL FIRE was going through some changes and they wanted to change all of them statewide. So instead, what they did is they grabbed that money and they put it aside. And they put it into their capital outlay and held it there. I want to say that there is mention of buying them this year, but it's in the original budget summary, not in this. Obviously not in this summary, but that's where they got the money from is they put aside 32, another 32. In the end, it ended up costing them just a tiny bit more than they had originally figured. But that's where the remainder of the money came from, or is coming from, is what I should say, is from their reserve account where they had stored the rest of the money that they did not use in the previous budget.
I'm glad they finally got that.
Yeah, but they finally got those, they finally got all that situated.
Regarding the comments on Assembly Bill 510, I too wondered how much of that would apply to us, because it sounded like a lot of videotaping of premises and things, security type videos that people were concerned about having to store for a long time, specifically said that open meeting documentation was not affected by that legislation. So I'm curious, yeah, just how much of our operations would be affected by it. But I could see where if you had a lot of security cameras, you wouldn't want to be storing a lot of that tape for very long.
The request was from the California Special District Association for just unanimously to try to get unanimously all the cities and districts within California to write and support of this particular. So that is what we're asking. So that is something maybe you guys, I guess we should have pulled that item so you guys can discuss it. I don't know how that works. So maybe if that's something that is on everybody's mind, do you want to send the letter or not?
Any other thoughts about that?
What would we do since we haven't covered?
Okay. Is this like Marshall's item? He was here.
No. He wasn't really in favor.
Yeah. He said he was like, he was, you know.
Is time of the
essence? I believe so, yes. Yeah, they have something due. I guess this bill is due sometime within the next week. But so... however you, this was just something that was presented by the CSDA, so. You're not?
Yeah, I'm not either. Okay. Especially without seeing, I guess, a proposal for our retention schedule, how it might change under this. You know, what are we going to do different, not what can the state... Maybe we should just pull that from consideration and table that action. We'll discuss it further.
Yeah, because you can always send the...
You could always just move items A through F and H and take no action on G, and it can come back later if you desire.
Okay.
Well, with that, I'll entertain a motion for moving the Administrative Committee Reports and Consent Agenda along.
Minus item
G.
I move that the board approve consent agenda items A through F and H. Pull G for later discussion.
I'll second.
And receive and file the administrative and committee reports. Okay. We've got a motion and a second. Do we have a resolution in there? We need a roll call then, don't we? Yeah.
Director Porcari?
Yes.
Director Wilmack?
Yes.
Director Millage?
Yes.
Vice President Sandman?
Yes. Okay. With that, we'll move on to general action items. And looks like the advisory committee work plans would be next. Is that it? Oh, okay.
That's all. We've attached the work plans for the board's finance and utilities advisory committee, parks and recreation meeting. Committee met this week, so that was on everybody's table, and one was back at the back of the room. And ESAC is not meeting until the 22nd, so we won't have theirs to approve until next month. But at this time, I'd like to hear any comments or questions or on the work plans.
See none. Okay, do we have any public comment on the work plans?
Julie Tacker again, and maybe in the future, this was helpful for me, is to look at last year's work plan and this year's work plan together so you can see what changed. Unless you went to a committee meeting, you wouldn't see that. And not everybody goes to every committee meeting. I don't have a lot of problem with any of it. What there is one thing, and your board in December, I think it was December, asked, maybe it was November, asked the Parks and Rec Committee to explore reimbursement from the county. There was a hiccup in the interpretation of the motion, and it turned into do fundraising to reimburse the district. And they didn't like that, and they sent you a letter asking that they not be charged with fundraising, and I don't think that was ever the intention. But I remember Andrea Luker on the committee, I think it was here in front of the board, that the night that you approved the funding for the rubber tire chip removal, she suggested that we save some of the material, put it in jars, and put it in front of the Board of Supervisors so they all could see it, smell it, taste it, whatever they wanted to do with it. But, you know, I thought there was going to be this effort from the committee, the Parks and Rec Committee, and every parent and grandparent and all the volunteers and the board and the public and the grandmas and the grandpas, and we would all march down to the Board of Supervisors and make a stink and ask for reimbursement in a timely fashion. And that's not on the work plan, that anybody's going to go do that, ever, organize it or do or follow through with it. I think it's important for the general manager to know where the board is, the Board of Supervisors, where they are in their budget process at this very moment. I'm sure the administration department is working on that. And we need to know or need to be getting that to them now in order to be considered for reimbursement in this next budget cycle. So I'm hopeful that that doesn't fall away, because that was their project and we did it. This community did it for them and deserves that reimbursement.
Yes. Just say any other public comment on the work plans. We will.
Lindy, I was here last night, and I couldn't. The work plan was the wording. The wordsmithing was taking forever. But I wanted to make item 2 says to obtain, review, discuss, and prioritize county and community studies on park needs in our district. I wonder if we could add in prioritize, blah, 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 prioritize past county and community studies, because that was what the subject was. They do exist, and I just, that feels very vague. And this... This seems like short of what we were talking about, but maybe we can add things. The ideas that we can add as we go along, if new things come in, right, that they can be added into the work plan. So, anyway, I think that there's more to be added to that work plan. Thanks.
Okay. Any other public comment? Seeing none, we'll bring it back to the board. And yes,
Lindy. Yeah, that is the past studies, but yeah, we wanted to leave it open for any new information that came. The idea is to look at the work that's been done to pull the residents of Los Osos to make sure that the committee is going in a direction, is recommending projects that are serving the most amount of people and the most interest that exists. So we talked extensively about the word past, and we wanted to leave room for new information to come in as it comes.
And then I also wanted to add that two things to cover two of your questions. One is, yes, any committee can add an item, but it's important that the committee chairs report that item that they want to add as soon as possible at that follow-up meeting, so that a whole month or 2 months doesn't go by. If you forget to do it, then now you do got to wait another month. So, but I feel we have that covered because we're doing reports now, and we'll be able to cover, you know, all the items that we talked about. So I feel that only puts a month in between what you you know, your meetings, as far as putting something on your work plan to be approved. And then the other item was we are actually putting on, we're going to meet next month. Usually the Parks Committee only meets every once in a while. These guys want to meet next month. And on the agenda item is how are we going to address the county. We didn't feel it needed to be on the work plan because it was something we're not going to put off forever. It's something we're discussing at our next meeting. And literally that is why we're having a meeting next month, is so that we can discuss it, because I wanted to coincide with the fact that they're working on, the county's starting to work on their budget. So, yes, we have all that planned, and we'll be discussing that on our next meeting.
That's good, because I don't want to lose that.
Yeah.
It's agendized, and you know, Jennifer and Lou both saved ample amounts of rubber chips as Exhibit A, B, C.
Good.
So,
okay.
I mean, everything that you talked about with that is in the works.
Good.
And I think our meeting is scheduled for April 2nd.
Future agenda items.
We probably would need a motion and action to approve the work plans.
Oh, yeah. That would be a good idea. I'll entertain a motion to approve work plans.
I second.
Okay, I made the motion to approve the work plans.
I'll make the motion to approve the work plans.
Then. Okay, you can have it.
And I'll second.
Okay, who made the motion?
I did.
Thank you. And second?
I'll second that also.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay, it carries unanimously. Thank you, Roy. Now, item G, do we just hold that over? Maybe we look at...
It's currently not... What would happen is, you mean 11G?
Yes.
Unless you tell us to bring it back on some future agenda, it won't be on.
Okay, I think that's fine. We can let that go.
We're not bringing it back.
Right. We'll let that go. But any other agenda items that we want considered for next time around?
Yes, I have one. And this is coming from the ad hoc work I've been doing that Marshall assigned me to last meeting, was about district communications and working with social media. So we've had Chris has helped me out quite a bit, and we've talked with Don at the Chamber. We've talked with Sandra at LOCAC. They're both doing similar projects right now. We both learned quite a bit. We have a proposed plan, which we're pretty excited about. I think it's going to improve the way we're able to communicate with citizens and give us some common ground with LOCAC in the chamber, where a lot of information can be shared collectively. And once we have an initial setup, we'll be able to get that information out quickly. So I'd like to agendize that for the next meeting to present the plan and the proposed budget for approval to move forward with our plan.
Okay, thank you. One of the benefits of younger blood, social media aware. Any other closing board comments from tonight?
The only thing I wanted to just reiterate, I appreciate the work that that Chris and Marshall have been doing on the bond refinancing, and that team did a good job for us, I think. I mean, just as a taxpayer, I'm really excited to be saving that money, and I'm excited for the board to have that extra budgetary money. So I just want to say thanks.
Yeah, I think that was that's a wonderful thing. It all came together pretty quickly. And thank you and welcome to your presence, too, on this board.
Thanks, Chuck.
Yeah, the right time to save $2 million is as soon as possible.
Certainly. Okay, with that, let's see. Our next meeting is scheduled for, we even have a note of that in here.
Fourth.
Okay, April 4th. With that, we'll adjourn this one.